included. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in. There we go. Brilliant. Tom's put it up. There's a book which Tom's just put the link in. It's not cheap. It's about 60 UK pounds, but it goes through all the different game mechanics. There's something like 163 of them. And, you know, if one is seriously into this, then it's an invaluable book. It's written in an academic language. It's not just fluffy. It takes some getting through, but it's a really, really good book. Thanks for the link, Tom.
Yes, building blocks of tabletop game design. That's a great one.
Yeah, Peter Williams has it on his screen. He was just showing it.
Both Peter and I, easy access right beside the computer. So feel free to take the next 13 minutes. Coffee, tea, lunch, dinner. I don't know what time it is for anyone. I am going to go have breakfast and we'll come back in 13 minutes for part two. And just to summarize, we have what do you mean? And then a 15-minute break. And then our last session, why should I care?
Thanks, Steph. Right. Let me get my notes up. Okay. So we're now on to our next session. What do you mean? Okay. So we all know exactly what we mean when we speak, although we can have trouble expressing it sometimes. I'm sure everyone has had that moment when they can't quite remember the word they're looking for, or two words come out as a mishmash of syllables. But even if we express ourselves clearly, other people can interpret the words differently. Take the example on the screen. We've got the second slide up. I asked you to grab me a handful of chips. Can you describe what object you pick up and how many did you take? So we just want to put your examples in the chat for me, please. Good choices. Right, so we have the next screen, please. So this is one example of cognitive bias. Okay, so if you wrote the fourth slide, please, Steph. Our brain makes shortcuts for us so that we don't have to spend too much time analyzing our decisions. The same sentence can have different meanings depending on where you grew up, where you went to school, what language you speak, and how your mind works. For example, the acronym DM does refer to direct message, dungeon master, diary master, really anything that can come up potentially. So for example, on neurodivergence, our brains can tell things differently. Some people have difficulty understanding metaphors or similes, so it's best to use plain English where possible, which is also good for those where English is a foreign language, which brings you nicely into language differences. Again, we've already talked about regional slang. I've had to go through this speech about two or three times to remove anything that I, a sort of either Midland slang or Scottish or Scots at all, to keep it in plain English. When it comes to different cultures, the same word can have different connotations or can be a false friend. For example, schmoozing your colleagues in English refers to networking and work, whereas in Austria, it would mean kissing your colleagues. So, you know, two very different meanings depending on the culture. Again, educational differences, where you go to school can imprint things slightly differently. People go to state school might interpret things a little bit different. Those who go to private school, those who went to a certain university might interpret things a little bit different to another university. Anyone is it? Example, from my own personal point, I went to Warwick, which is a very business-focused university. Even though I did the same course as a friend of mine, they went to Cambridge, for example, where they had a very different interpretation of how that course was taught and how it was therefore interpreted in terms of the language used around the same subject. A really good example of this is the word grab. This will invoke certain feelings and images in your mind. For example, if you're taught that to grab something was bad, then you react negatively to the sentence without even knowing why. For players, this makes sense. You need to focus on playing the game and understand the wider context of what you're doing. You need to make strategic decisions based on the bigger picture and other players' intentions. You don't want to be trying to understand what the instructions have meant and could be frustrated if they aren't clear. If we go to the fifth slide, please. Let's put the games you designed in session one to the test. Everyone put back into their groups, only this time you'll be playing someone else's game. you'll have to rely on the written instructions alone without help from the other groups. We'll come back in 20 minutes and take a look what how things went. So if you could go back, so what we'll do is we've just brought them up. Now, I believe Tom is inviting you to different rooms. One second, I'm just going to hit. Not now.
When you make the breakout rooms, can you set it to choose a breakout room? Oh, it is. Beautiful.
Excellent.
Yeah. So if everyone can go back to the room that you were previously in, I put all of the group links in the main chat so everyone should be able to access it. Although I don't think anyone ever actually left.
Okay. So yeah, have a go. Come and have everyone back in the room by 25 to. That'd be fantastic. Actually, while you're doing that step, I'll just step into the next chunk because we don't need the presentation for the next little bit for the moment. What I'd like people to do, can we put in the chat, or if you want to say it, like, can you describe the experience of trying this game, trying instructions out in one word? Ooh, we have enlightening. Fun. Yes, that is a key one. That is it. I like nostalgia. That's a good one. Fun's always a key one. We'll make these, you know, we might be dealing with some quite serious sort of topics and all the rest, but key part of this is ensuring that participants are enjoying themselves, that way they stay engaged rather than I agree with Karen on that. Defenestration, or, you know, how Russian businesses change CEOs is a fantastic word to be used. Yes, sir. Right. Okay, so we've got some words floating around. That's good. So we're just going to move on to entertaining. Again, also really so key when we're sort of putting these things together. Really so key. Now, here's my next point. Did you encounter any sort of ambiguity? Again, feel free to put something in the chat or just shout it out loud. Okay, we've got yeses, I've got thumbs up. Okay, can you give me an example of this, guys? Okay, so Beth is... Now, Beth, am I right in saying you were with Noughts and Crosses, weren't you?
Yeah.
So where would you say there was room for misinterpretation in the instructions given?
There was just one instruction where the wording, I knew what it meant, but someone mentioned if you were being pedantic that you could read it in a different way to say, you know, if you were cross, you could actually take Noughts counter and play it for them. It's all about, I suppose, interpretation and perception, isn't it? But we're analysts, I guess. We're going to overthink things.
Very true. No, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Karen, what were you, which section were you in?
Yeah, so we were reviewing battleships, and okay. They use different words. In some cases, they use some quite bizarre words to describe things, like the amount of space is consumed by a ship. And then in the very next line, they talked about the space it occupies, which is a little bit odd.
Okay, yep, yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Karen. Brian has a very useful game development. I see. Lock the verbs out, record people playing the game, and then forcing them to watch the video. That would be an interesting task. Rob, dish them up, assume between what tool players. Again, talk about sort of like clarity of language, ensuring so we also being that. Yes, excellent. Right, so we've talked about ambiguity. Now let's look at sort of the positive. Did anyone find a instruction particularly helpful? And if so, what was it? Feel free to stick it in the chat or shout it out.
So one thing that I noticed was that trying to keep everything written was really difficult. A lot of times we wanted to use diagrams or pictures to illustrate concepts that would be really hard to do with using words only.
Okay. It's a good chance. Okay, we've got Graham and Colm are talking about flowcharts. Yeah. Good to see Benjamin's old programmer has appreciated it. Again, so looking at some of the language that need to be written and critiqued. Again, come back to the idea of playtesting, really, isn't it, guys? So taking a look at something a few different ways and talk, maybe even having someone who doesn't have a background in the game you're designing to come take a look at it and sort of see any sort of inconsistencies and the like. Okay, so excellent suggestion from Tim to translate. That's something I'll attempt to do myself, I think. That's what I write a war game. Okay, so Steph, any luck with the presentation?
Nope, we are slideless.
Okay. Solid. I'll paint a picture with words then. That is the entire point of a lot of this, isn't it? So let's go back to the previous example I brought up about chips. It might seem simple, but it's actually relying on implicit understanding. Do you pick up a handful with your hand? Do you pull them out? How many, and indeed how many do you give each person? What do we even mean by a chip? We had some excellent, examples, obviously food, obviously gambling as well, but wood chips for gardening, barbecues, that sort of thing. That was some really interesting sort of suggestions there. In game design, however, there is luckily a simple solution. However, it is time consuming. You need to make your instruction as specific and as clear as possible. For example, if I said, take a few steps forward, how could we improve those instructions? Again, in the chat, shout out, anything you like.
Simple language, simple English. Oh, I just said simple language, like simple English. Use basic terms.
Okay. Excellent. We've got some really good suggestions here. In the game, you will also want to tell where exactly the starting point is. Is it zero? Is it different? Is it zero? Is it one? Is it different for each player? You also want to count the exact numbers as well, which we've got some really good suggestions there as well. Specify the steps going in, which again, that's been wonderfully suggested. Now, if you have several directions, you can see starting from here, we will take X number of steps in any direction, following the arrows, although you cannot divide the number to change direction. So we've got lots of really good suggestions to chat and some really sort of coming into that as well. It's brilliant. This is why instruction manuals and board games are so long. By creating specific, identifiable instructions, we can reduce ambiguity and potential contention between players, allowing them to focus on the themes you have identified for your game. This is particularly important to remember when treating sensitive issues. Here's an example of a sensitive issue. If we were to make a game about the LGBT plus experience in Russia, you may want to create a sort of a starting session beforehand to understand what terminology to use. We need to make sure all of your players are comfortable, even if you don't necessarily understand why they are uncomfortable. In the UK, for example, it's becoming so increasingly common among many LGBT plus people, like myself, although I personally use the word, quite a few people use the word queer to describe themselves if they don't fall neatly into a single category. However, if one of your players has had a negative experience with the word queer, this will distract them from the game. This might preferably use a different term that allows them to play the game fullest, giving you their best possible playthrough. This is the reason why we'd have one of these word zero, saying this is a term we plan to use. Does anyone have an issue? And if so, let's find a solution to work our way around it. Now, that's obviously particularly fairly contentious. That's a little bit of contentious language. So that's something of you. However, this now brings us on to our last session of the day, after a 15-minute break, of course. Why should you care? And I'm going to hand over to Steph at this point.
So we are working on getting our slides back up and running. We can do 5-10 minutes of discussion if anyone has anything to say about ambiguity or anything more about the activity as well. And just have some conversation before we do the break. If anyone has anything to say, if not, then we can go straight into the 15-minute break. Feel free to just unmute and go right ahead.
Yeah, sorry, can I just say one thing? Sorry, I was just trying to track down our keynote speaker, distracted. I just come back to the point that three of us who were doing the tic-tac-toe just mentioned the use of flowcharts, and I have to admit, using that flowchart to follow it through just made life so much easier, as opposed to just like reading, you know, paragraph after paragraph. And I think an increasing convention, again, coming back to board games, so Euro games rather than war games, is on page one is to have some sort of pictorial flowchart which just shows the processes of the overall game. And that's literally on page one. And then from that, you deconstruct and go on. So there's something in there about using something like flowcharts, pictures, and the rest of it, as opposed to blocks and blocks of texts. Over.
Yeah, absolutely. That is what we tend to use for designing at Imaginetic. And I found it's been an amazing way to go about designing, much easier to identify problems, switch parts out, start at halfway through the game, and then play a test the second half of it, as opposed to having to run through the whole thing. Michael, I see you unmuted. Did you have something you want to say?
Sorry.
Oh, there's two Michaels. Oh my goodness. Okay. Michael Pilling first, and then Michael Young.
I was just going to say, if you've got people from other cultures or languages involved, it's a really good thing to check the meaning of what you've written down in English. We had a Holden car called a Nova, and they tried to sell it in Spain and wondered why no one was buying it. And in Spanish, it means doesn't go.
Yes, word choice is absolutely key, and knowing who your audience is, which is our overarching theme of our session, and tailoring the words you use, the graphics you choose, all of that to who your audience is so absolutely important. Because of that, you know, just one word and they completely lose interest because it doesn't match with what their knowledge of the word means. Objective is also important, absolutely. Explaining what you need to do to win and what winning conditions are, yes. Michael Young, would you like to?
Yeah, I think flowchart is a really good thing to add to a game. Someone wrote an article about this about 40 years ago and did a flowchart of the SPI game. I think it was Constantinople, and I couldn't, about the siege of Constantinople. I couldn't understand the rules when I read them, but when I saw the flowchart, it was much easier. And I also used to teach Cosmic Encounter by making a flowchart. I made a flowchart for how to play Cosmic Encounter. And I waved that at the people and they all got the game much quicker than trying to explain everything. So I'm highly in favor of doing flowcharts and sticking them in the front of the rules.
Yeah, 100%. It really does, especially for complex games, I find it helps very clearly show you what your options are every turn as well, especially if you have a menu of 5+ actions that you can choose from. It really helps you narrow down exactly what you want to do, and you can try to better understand the outcome of each decision so you can make a better decision when you're playing. Anyone else have anything they want to say?
Oh, I was just going to highlight my background is kind of social science and human factors, and that was for me, like, I completely agree. And I was just in my head, I thought, oh, that's how important that kind of background and influence in game design is, because it's such an integral part of it. And I just thought that was useful insight.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm glad that everyone has positive takeaways from this. Were there any flaws with any instructions, like lack of particular word choice or something that was maybe a bit muddy and unclear that we should highlight for designers to potentially stay away from?
In the tic-tac-toe example specifically, so there was one phrase, I can't read it off my computer now, but with the explanation of if you're cross or if you're not, that was a bit wordy. And I think when we were sort of interpreting it, we would make that perhaps simpler English. And that probably links back to the point that was made in terms of like cultural interpretation, that would reduce kind of unpicking, you know, obviously we know the rules of tic-tac-toe, noughts and crosses, so we understand it. But if you didn't play it or didn't know how to play it, that might cause confusion later down the line. So you could just probably simplify it. I think often maybe, especially in the British culture, we overcomplicate things to make ourselves look good. like just avoiding that would be good in general from my observation.
Yeah. Something I learned in elementary school that I carry with me to this day is 10 words or less. Everything and anything can be explained in a clear way in 10 words or less. Things obviously need further explanation from that, but in terms of writing down rules for something like tic-tac-toe, it's so simple that you really do just need 10 words or less. Of course, you can't explain like nuclear physics in 10 words or less, but you can explain some concepts of it much more simply than you can initially think. So thank you, Beth.
Useful point.
10 yeah, words or less per sentence, or is it 10 words or less, do you think?
In general, Mike, in general.
General. So note form, post-it notes, emails can be 10 words or less. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's quite fun when you like challenge yourself to say less, really, I think. We should do that more often.
Yeah. A university assignment that we had was write a memo about a really complex political topic, and you have 10 words to let some higher political person know everything about the situation in 10 words or less. So yes, if I had had more time, I would have written a shorter letter. It is really hard to shorten things. I completely agree. So Michael, yes, go ahead. I see you unmuting.
Yes. One thing that came up with the battleship example was not saying why you cared about something. It talked about the classes of ship, but it didn't tell you what was important about different classes in the game.
Yes. So explaining the purpose behind the components.
Yes. And there were several attributes of a ship, but which one would you make your decision on?
Yeah, absolutely. You always want your players to know that there is a purpose for having something included. And even if the purpose is to be a distraction, obviously that's not something you want to put in the rules, but you want it to become clear to the player at some point that something has a purpose, or the purpose of something is specifically to not have a purpose. I know I've included little tidbits like that in games that I've designed where, you know, you really so badly want it to be important and then it ended up just being a waste of space. So our job as designers is to bring the magic of engagement and immersion to our simulations in an inclusive way. Quite simply, we need to appeal to our clients and audiences to bring them into the world we created, even if it's a reflection of our own reality. As soon as our players become disengaged, we've failed at our jobs, and there's very rarely a possibility of regaining player attention once lost. This being said, here are some things to keep in mind regarding our audiences during the design process to avoid any lasting mistakes. We need to keep the design process or the design approachable, digestible, relatable, and understandable for our audience. Think about who you're designing for. Are they professionals in the field, new to the field? Are you designing a game in English for a non-English speaking audience or vice versa? Does your audience have specific cultural aspects that may affect how they perceive a game? Whether culture means geocultural or company culture, both have particular requirements. If your game is very complex, but your audience is not composed of frequent gamers, is it too complex for them to be interested in playing? Keeping in mind that this particular issue is less of an issue in military wargaming, because everyone would have similar understandings. The game also needs to be relatable to the players in some way, whether by using pop culture references for that generation or particular graphic styles and colors that may appeal more to them than another style. These, among many other things, are the questions to be asking during the design process. To get more specific, you really need to put yourself into your audience's shoes and try to understand them. You need to identify your own assumptions about the audience demographic and then challenge what you think you know. And this came up in part two of the exercise, where I noticed a couple people were saying in the chat that you really can't assume anything about prior knowledge for the people playing your game. assumptions can directly lead to loss of engagement, particularly when it comes to diction and word choice. If you assume that an audience will have particular knowledge of gaming terms and they don't, you'll lose them as they won't be able to immediately understand or relate to the content. A key way to go about assumption challenging is to reflect on the meaning, as highlighted in the "what did you mean" portion, of words chosen, mechanics used, and font, color, and graphics too. Ask yourself, how might my audience react to this title written in this font with this color palette? So taking an example from last year's conference, Connections UK, written in red cursive or white block lettering, gives two very different interpretations. The red cursive would be more of a dating app kind of vibe that's given, whereas white block lettering would be more of a conference or a professional space. So does anyone have anything that they want to say on that? Any questions, any comments on really focusing on who your audience is when you're designing? Okay, we'll go to the next slide then. So to highlight our points even more, here's a real example for you. What is this symbol? You can type in the chat what you think it is. You can just shout it out. No guess is a wrong guess. So we have armored unit, tanks, armor, looks like a Kleenex box, hockey rink, wash at 30 degrees, race track, Panzer. That means ask Major Tom. That's a good one, yes. A pill. Goggles. Okay, so we see that there's a lot of variety. And so we'll go to the next slide. What's this symbol? Tank. Tank, 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 tank. Yes, this one is much clearer. Oh, duck or rabbit, okay. We'll go to the next slide. So both symbols are tanks or armored units. One is accessible only to those who have a prior knowledge of NATO unit symbology. If you use the NATO symbol, you're restricting your potential audience and preventing the immersion of any participants who may have wanted to try your game. If, for example, you're designing a joint NATO humanitarian game for whatever reason, this becomes a pressing issue because half of your audience will have a much higher cognitive load to deal with during the game by having to learn an entirely new gaming language, being NATO unit symbology. If you use the tank icon, the game becomes much more approachable and understandable to a wider audience. Oh, yes, as Peter just put in the chat, or educating the audience on a standard symbology system. But who decides what the standard symbol would be? There is universal symbols for airport or man, woman. So NATO's standard symbology is standard only in NATO. Outside of NATO, it's not standard. And I know that for me, it's been a learning curve to learn NATO symbology. And so some ways around that we did talk about earlier, it's the same kind of thing with acronyms. If you put a glossary where you can say, okay, this is the symbol that we're using, this is what it means. Having a player aid for easy reference, using both symbols also works, or having options to play with one symbol alphabet versus another. So why should you care? Again, our job as designers is to provide an approachable, immersive, and safe experience for our audiences. Games and simulations are made for our clients and our audiences. They must remain at the forefront of our minds during the entire design process. It is up to us to ensure the game accurately reflects the objective, but that is also digestible for whoever our audience may be, whether we can directly relate with them or not. So they always, always, always have to be at the forefront of our mind because the design is for them. It's not for us, the designer. So I'm going to just look at the chat. How much time is available to do that? What aids need to be put in place to overcome the learning hurdle? So again, whoever the wider audience is, that needs to be taken into account. In the context of the NATO humanitarian joint game, I personally would use both icons, because over time, as the non-NATO players play, they'll become more familiar with it and can maybe transition to only using the NATO symbology. But everyone knows what a tank looks like. Not everyone knows what an armored unit in NATO symbology means. Readability versus accessibility, visual simplicity versus skeuomorphism. Yes, absolutely. What's easier to look at? When you look at something, what is the first thing that comes to mind? When I look at a tank symbol, first thing that comes to mind is a tank. When someone else looks at the NATO symbol for a tank, the first thing that comes to mind might not be tank or armored unit. Put a binocular symbol next to the unit to indicate recon. Yep, that's amazing. Using other symbols to help clarify symbols is great. Okay, Michael put in a good point that I was unaware of. Women and men as standard symbols in the washroom is different culturally. So that's important as well. Everyone knows what a tank looks like is just as valid as everyone knows military symbology. I mean, it depends what kind of military symbology you're talking about. But of course, not everyone will know what a tank is until they've seen one and can I become identified with the visual aspect of it with what a tank is. Yeah. How easy is that tank outline to see from a distance? That is key as well. Someone with visual accessibility issues may have trouble differentiating some things. So using more bulky and broad icons is better than the specific one. I chose a specific one because I knew it would be projected big, but absolutely there's different styles of icons even within basic, quote unquote, basic icon choice. If anyone wants to unmute and discuss that way as well, please feel free. Why is the NATO symbol the way it is? It sacrifices accessibility for readability if you know what it means already. Yeah, if you know what it means already, great, very easy. If not, a little more difficult. Kira, yes.
Yeah, hi, Steph. I think sometimes the use of symbols is a bit of one-upmanship. You know, it's kind of like, well, I'm in the industry or in that knowledge base and you're not, because you've either had to ask what it means or you just don't know and you keep quiet and hope you work it out. And then by the time you've realized you can't work it out, it's too embarrassing to actually ask what that is. I've done games like that where I've been like, I can't ask now because I've left it too long. And if you can be more upfront with either accepting that you don't know, or, you know, the game designer actually making it accessible of what these clues or symbols actually do mean, it's really helpful.
100%. Having a safe space to be able to ask as well and not being scared of having anyone basically call you dumb or tell you you don't belong because you had a question about what a symbol means. When you're designing games and running playtests, make sure that your space is safe and inclusive for people to ask the questions that they have. Especially if it's a clarifying question, it's not a stupid question if it helps them participate fully. Yes, and S, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Steph, so I think there's a flip side. I completely agree with that last point, and yet there's a flip side to that too, which is, you know, considering the use of that terminology, if that is the current language of your client base. So if you're dealing with military personnel primarily, you know, using that potentially removes one hurdle and allows them to think in a way that's more naturalistic to them. So that's quite an important consideration. So these things are always trade-offs, right? You've got to trade off what's the cost and the benefit and you know, which one's more important to me under the circumstances. And one of the ways of creating that safe space is potentially removing the need to be able to have to raise that question if that's going to be problematic with your particular demographic by providing, you know, as you mentioned, some sort of aid memoir to address that. And can I just reiterate the point I made before in the notes? In many years of designing war games and using these terminology, I don't know many of them. And the experts, the military experts who are war gamers who do this, have been doing it much longer than me, never know all of the symbols. And as soon as one person raises the question, there's a lot of people going, oh yeah, okay, that's what it is, right? I didn't know. So
yeah, 100%. I mean, as the designer, it's up to you to learn the new language that your audience uses and apply that in your game to make it easier for them. It's more work on us, but it's our job, right? We're making this for someone else's use, so it needs to be usable by them. Is symbology a form of gatekeeping, a structuralism, so we only let certain people in or succeed? I'm going to open that one up to general discussion. What do you all think about symbology as a form of gatekeeping?
I think context is key. So having a military background, symbology for me as a soldier was really useful. If you're looking at a map and you're battle tracking, and it's a quick shorthand way of knowing what order of battle is on the terrain. But if it's not relevant and you're just doing it to show off, then it's probably not going to help. Context is key from my perspective.
Yeah. I see Tom also wrote in the chat, each nation uses symbols differently and the cognitive load for the military is greater than using silhouettes. Absolutely. As we said earlier, you know, even red has different meanings in different cultures, and to use symbols or color or word choice at all as if it's all encompassing and applies to everyone, I personally think that that's the wrong way to go about it. You really need to look at who your audience is, because you don't want there to be a misunderstanding on that level when they're playing your game, because it could completely take away from the objective of the game. Perhaps we should design war games with Russian or Chinese symbology to see if the way they represent things tells us anything new. Absolutely. Why not? I mean, it's a different
way
of looking at the
world. If you have a native speaker of the language, I think that's relevant. If you had someone who actually spoke the language within the audience that you're referring to, I think that would make that really interesting. But if you didn't have that, I think it would be super confusing.
Yes. Thank you, Beth. I completely agree. You need to look at it from the culture's perspective, not as an outsider looking in. You really need someone who understands the language, the culture, meanings, and all of that to be able to explain it, to do that in the best possible way. But I definitely think it's worth it. Symbols need to be revisited periodically as a feature. Creep in symbology creates huge messes, like mechanized infantry with IFVs or amphibious mechanized infantry start to become unusable messes. Yes, everything needs to be reevaluated eventually and refurbished as well. Moments of confusion when you teach them for the joint humanitarian NATO example, but they will have learned something from your game to take into the future. Absolutely. If that is a learning objective of the game, to have them be on a level where they can communicate with NATO symbology, absolutely do that. If that's something that they've indicated in the initial steps of a design brief that they don't want, they want something that's easily accessible, easy to replay, then that might not be an outcome that they want or really prioritize. So again, it comes back to, you really need to think about who your audience is and what they want. Is anyone going to update the save floppy disk icon anytime soon, though? Probably not. Maybe they should, but probably not.
They actually tried to get rid of it for a while, and then they brought it back because all the old people couldn't figure out what to do without it. One of my former students is a director at Microsoft, and this is something that they grapple with on a regular basis, is how to use old symbols versus new ones. And it's the same questions we're asking here.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some things that become staples in a culture, but over time, eventually it will phase out anyways. For example, I know for me and people that are generally older than me, if you're going to use a hand sign for a phone, you're going to go like this. people younger than me now go like this, because that's how you hold a phone these days. I still think of flip phones. So it all depends on who it is you're talking to. Everything in Afghanistan was wheeled armored, and there was a lot of them. Yes, symbol libraries, absolutely. Symbol libraries is a great idea. There's a role here for the facilitator. Part of their job is to prevent SMEs using abbreviations or to explain them as they go, et cetera, of course. Facilitation is a whole other ballpark that has so many different mechanisms to it, and explaining, knowing the game well enough to be able to explain everything and avoid and to control the SMEs from using abbreviations and acronyms as much as possible, or at least explaining them, is really important. It's truly a skill. Almost all symbols are learned. Absolutely, they are learned. I've only seen one that was intuitive, two stick figures, one half the size of the other, and waves going above the head of the shorter person. That sounds pretty descriptive. Yeah, absolutely, symbols are learned, and it depends on what culture you're growing up in. There are some that are more intuitive than others, of course. But yes, of course, everything is learned and everything can be relearned. And there's no harm in teaching people new symbols, new anything. It's just a matter of, is that what they want or not? Feel free to unmute if you have anything else you want to say. Perspective too, absolutely. Absolutely. And Rob put in a link for icons. There's also a website called The Noun Project where you can get a bunch of icons for free. They have a huge library, bunch of different styles. So that's also quite lovely. Noun Project. Here, I'll put the link. The Noun. I put it in the chat. If anyone has any questions not directly related to the use of symbols, feel free to also bring that up. Going into some playtesting stuff. Good. I'm glad that you're having things that can be taken away. Mean Girls reference. Yes, absolutely. We appeal to all generations. On Wednesdays, we do War Game. So I'll go over this slide. We send out a newsletter on the first Wednesday of every month, and you can sign up for that on our website. On the second Wednesday of every third month, a lot of dates, we do game night. Night UK time, afternoon Eastern time. On September 14th, so next week, we're playing This War of Mine. The next date after that would be December 14th, you only have to wear pink if you really want to wear pink. Absolutely, you can. And then our conference, Connections Next Gen, will be a game day in March 2023. And then the two-day conference will be October. So changing it up a little bit from this year. All signups can be done on our website, as I said, and feel free to email us if you have any questions or just want to chat or anything like that. That's so fetch. Oh, thank you.
I told you the Mean Girls reference was genius.
It is. It really is.
I wasn't expecting it, but it's made me super happy.
Yeah, that's what happens when we get put in charge of a conference.
Yeah.
So, if no one else has any other contributions, that is it from us.
Sorry, Stephanie, it's Graham here. Sorry. I misunderstood. Is there another breakout session coming? Because I've got one point I'd like to raise. So we haven't got another breakout or discussion check?
Nope. Raise okay. All the points you'd like.
All right. In that case, sorry, give me 2 secs. I'm just going to pop something into the chat. Dun, dun, dun. So I haven't actually finished preparing this, so it's a little bit. So it's just, boom, there you go. So I think that was fantastic. Really enjoyed that, and it stretched me. To be honest, I was hoping to have like a little bit of an afternoon downtime, and you kept me going. So, but thank you very much indeed. No, the point here is I think this relates to a lot of what you guys were talking about, and is the distinction between Herzinger's magic circle, which is like what I think we and you were talking about, I getting people immersed and all the things you talked about. But then I was listening to a board game podcast, Shut Up and Sit Down, which is fantastic, the other day, and they explicitly said, and I love this, that their magic circle, so board games, is, and this chimes, understanding and playing within the rules. That's point number one. And then point number two, setting out to ensure that everyone has fun. And I find there's a real distinction between designing and delivering games for a serious audience, whether it's military or whoever, where it is absolutely Herzinger's, so people play by the rules, yes, but they have to be immersed in the magic bubble. But then when I'm running my board game group at home in my village in Wiltshire, is everyone has to play by the rules, because if you don't play by the rules, the game doesn't work. But also actively setting out to make sure that everyone has fun. And there's part of that second one that applies to the first one. So, you know, games, serious games, whatever the context should be, if not fun, then at least professionally satisfying or fulfilling, even if they're not fun because the context doesn't support that. But I think there's something about both of those. You have to play by the rules. We tend to think of it, the magic circle is immersion. In board games, they tend to make it that people, you set out to make people have fun. Sorry, that was a bit of an unformed thought, because I thought I had a few more minutes, but I just wanted to get that one in there. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fun and engagement aren't necessarily the same, but they absolutely go together. If people are having a good time, they're more likely to be engaged and remain engaged. Catherine just put in the chat, so the rules should reinforce immersion and don't let you do ridiculous things. Yes and no. They shouldn't be unrealistic things, but if it's realistic, for example, in the context of a Matrix game, if it's a bit ridiculous but realistic, I think absolutely. But as soon as you pass that threshold of realistic into kind of more imaginative, and D&D rule of cool style, then you kind of move away from keeping the professional realm engaged, I find. But yeah, it depends on whether immersion is valuable to the purpose of your game or not. Some ridiculous things might be immersive, absolutely. Fun and engagement is the difference between fun and engagement is key. Serious games don't need to be fun, but they do need to be engaging. Yes, exactly. Yes, Nick, absolutely. They do need to be engaging. They are not there for fun. A lot of the time for serious games, participants are not willing participants. As bad as that is to say, you kind of get told, okay, you're going to go play this game now. It's for training. It's for team building or whatever the purpose of the game is. A lot of the time you're told you're going to play it. You don't necessarily get to choose. Whereas at conferences, you are choosing which game you're going to go play. So generally you're going to be more engaged because you're picking one that you like and you want to play test. But in reality at the office, you get what you get and you don't get upset. But that doesn't mean you're necessarily engaged. So that's a completely different challenge than making it fun. Control for cognitive overload to maximize RAM for the part of the game you need people to focus on. Yes. You don't want players to be overwhelmed with how much they need to remember and how much they need to think about, unless it's for the particular aspect of your game you really want them to think about and you want them to be overwhelmed and be stressed out to make those decisions in that context. Tom, I see you've turned your camera on. You have something to say? No? Will, do you have anything you want to contribute?
No, I do not. I'm just currently sending out tweets on to celebrate our achievements here. So, like I said, we do have a Twitter handle. We do have an Instagram. So please do look up Connections Next Gen Info and feel free to follow us for more social media content, which will be mostly promoting what we do around here. I have really nothing more to add apart from thank everyone for their participation and for some truly excellent suggestions from everyone, as well as some really sort of unique takes on some classic board games, really.
Yeah, thank you so much, Connections UK, for having us for the afternoon. Yeah. We really appreciate it, and we hope that everyone took something away from this afternoon with us that they can use in the future.
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was really useful. We're just having some technical issues here. We are going to have a 15-minute break, 1:05. Give yourselves a chance to get afternoon tea for those of you in the UK. and those of you abroad, well, just get, you know, whatever floats your boat. We are all a bit sugared out because I bought lots of sweets and things for the technical team. So, you know, in the finest tradition of lots of preservatives and high sugar sweets, we're all buzzing now. But we're going to have 15 minutes, and then Jim Mormont is going to do some extra bits and pieces. We like to think that we're adaptable and fleet of foot here on the Connections team. So I hope you've got something out of the session with the younger generation. And we'll be back here in 15 minutes. Wait. Oh, hang on, Tom's just here.
On Teams.
Oh, yes. Apologies, my mistake. We'll be on Teams, which is on the original link. We like the Zoom platform, but the Teams is more adaptable. Oh.
The Teams link for the keynote session.
The Teams link for the keynote speaker. Yes, I'm getting a thumbs up. I feel like one of those news presenters, you know, as it's happening in the room. So the Teams link for the news presenter, I'm going to put that in the chat. Maybe we can leave the Zoom links open. So anybody joining, we'll perhaps put a link on there as well. So see you there, folks.
I'm not sure he's going to stay on here, but everyone who's just done that, thank you so much. That reinforced to me a real contrast between this morning's session, which was great, and this afternoon's session, which was great in a very, very different way. So, you know, let's stay in touch. We just need to keep this synergy going, because what you guys are doing absolutely is invaluable to what we're doing. So thank you very much indeed. You know, let's just keep it all going. That was great in so many different ways. Like I said, you kept me working for much longer than I was hoping to, but I learned a lot. So thank you very much indeed. Grand job.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, we are always happy to come back to Connections UK, where it started.
Be careful. You're talking yourself into you know what. Let's hold that thought and pick up that thought. Now, anyway, that was brilliant. Cheers, guys. Fantastic. Right, we're going to sort out this next session. Cheers.
Thank you.